KQED.
Digital Foundry Business and Software Consulting is proud to support its multinational clientele and the California Report podcast, Digital Foundry, on the web at digitalfoundry.com.
From KQED Public Radio, this is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. On today's show, The Color of Justice. Does the racial diversity of judges make a difference? And everyone's jumping on the green bandwagon, but is there room for environmentally friendly gas stations?
You know, it's nice that they, you know, solar power and use recycled materials. You know, it says, hey, they're doing something, but it's still BP gas. It's not like healthy gas, you know.
Also, play ball. As professional baseball starts off the new season, a look at the game through the eyes of little leaguers and their parents.
The one thing that I hope they get out of it is that they come out here and have fun. This time their life goes by too quickly, it gets too serious too fast, that they should come out here and do what the game of baseball was meant for, is have fun.
Those stories, plus having fun with a very, very complicated mathematics discovery, it's the California Report. Well, in case you missed it, Friday is Cesar Chavez Day, a state holiday honoring the guy who organized farm workers in California. The work of people like Chavez focuses attention on California's diversity, and that was a theme recently at a public ceremony in San Francisco. Mariachi music echoed through Herbst Theater, celebrating the appointment of a new judge. Lori Giorgi, a longtime deputy city attorney, was appointed to the Superior Court by Governor Schwarzenegger.
I, Loretta Giorgi, do solemnly swear.
Giorgi is the daughter of a Mexican-American mother and a father who emigrated from Italy. Her mother, who died when she was a teenager, spent some time as a social worker with farm laborers in Fresno. And Giorgi keeps a framed drawing of Cesar Chavez in her office. She says the ethnic diversity of her own family will help guide her as a judge.
My parents also exposed me to a lot of diverse cultures, not only on the Mexican-American side and the Italian side, but they had a lot of friends from various different cultures. And I think I bring a lot of those experiences to the bench so that those that appear before me will understand that I do have some sense of where they're coming from, what their issues are, what their concerns are, and who they are as people.
As a Latina judge, Lori Giorgi is in the distinct minority in California. Earlier this month, the state released data on California's 1,600 judges from the Supreme Court on down. They are overwhelmingly white men. Many people, including state Supreme Court Chief Justice Ronald George, think those numbers undermine public trust in government.
And to the extent that the bench is an approximate reflection of the general population, I think that helps instill confidence, whereas if we have only white males sitting on the bench and we have an extremely multicultural, multi-ethnic population, it detracts from the degree of confidence that people would have in the on the bench.
Minority bar associations say the governor hasn't done enough to diversify the bench. Of the more than 200 judges he's appointed so far, about 20% are Asian, Latino, or Black. The governor's office says that's because the pool of eligible attorneys in California is also overwhelmingly white. That's part of the reason, says Pacific McGeorge Law School Dean Elizabeth Rinskoff Parker.
Law is still the second least diverse profession in our country. I mean, this is really amazing. We lawyers have been busy suing to desegregate this, that, or the other. If you look way back when, you know, when I was a pup lawyer and, you know, what about ourselves? It's kind of a doctor cure yourself situation.
Dean Parker works with the State Bar Association to encourage more Latino, Black, and Asian students to become lawyers. The problem, she says, is that when it comes to minority students, the pipeline from grade school to law school is leaking.
If you were to chart the number of diverse students moving along this educational pipeline, you'd see kind of a bleeding. Fewer and fewer numbers, fewer graduating from high school, fewer successful in college, not graduating from the two-year schools, not making it through the four-year schools. And, of course, by the time then the numbers arrive in the point that is most critical to law schools, applying to law school, they're very small numbers.
What's needed, she says, is a comprehensive approach, more outreach to minority high school and college students to help them envision a career in law, and mentors, not just for law students, but for young minority lawyers who may not find law firm culture very welcoming. But it will take years to see the effects of those kinds of changes, and the governor is under pressure now to appoint more minorities to the bench. Schwarzenegger's critics are encouraged by the appointment of a San Diego prosecutor to be his new judicial appointment secretary. Sharon Majors Lewis is the first African-American woman to serve in that job, and she's spreading the word that now is a very good time for minority attorneys to apply for judgeships.
I want everyone who has 10 years of practice under their belt, who believes that they can sit in a courtroom and listen to evidence and facts, who believes that they can be fair and impartial, I want them to apply. We want to expand this pool of applicants so that we can put those people on the bench.
Critics say the governor has overlooked lots of qualified minority applicants who could have been appointed. Majors Lewis can relate to that. She herself was passed over by Governors Wilson and Davis. So now she's going back and reviewing applications from minority lawyers who didn't get appointed by Schwarzenegger.
For instance, if a person was right on the border between being exceptionally well qualified, and then even maybe down to qualified, then I'm looking at it again to see if I can determine why a person may have been passed over. If it looks like it was a subjective analysis as opposed to something objective, then I might give it a second look.
Democrats in the legislature are watching this closely. Last year, they struck a deal with the governor. In exchange for funding 50 new trial court judges, Schwarzenegger agreed to keep track of gender and racial data from sitting judges and those who apply for judicial appointments. They see it as a way of keeping the heat on him to appoint more minority judges. The governor is also being encouraged to place less emphasis on trial experience and give candidates more credit for things like community service. Having new judges with less trial experience doesn't bother Chief Justice Ronald George.
What's so important is the ability to be fair and impartial, to weigh competing arguments, to understand legal principles, to engage in analysis, and to see different points of view.
All this might leave you wondering why the gender, race, and ethnicity of judges matters. After all, isn't justice supposed to be blind? Well, judges are supposed to treat everyone who comes before them the same, but the governor's judicial appointment secretary, Sharon Majors Lewis, says a judge's race and ethnicity can affect the way they see an issue or a person in their court.
When you have people with all of these diverse backgrounds in the court, you may react differently to a given situation. There are, unfortunately, stereotypes about certain groups that exist, and if you are not familiar with the culture of people that appear in front of you, you will see things differently, I believe.
The governor now has about 70 judicial vacancies to fill, a chance to make good on his promise to change the face of California's courts. In a city where residents are known for their environmental zeal as much as for their smog-producing wheels, this was bound to happen. L.A. is now home to the world's first green gas station. The oil giant BP hopes to use the station to educate consumers on reducing their impact on the environment while they fill their cars with gasoline that's helping to pollute it. Los Angeles Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz explains.
On a stretch of West LA's Olympic Boulevard, where drab mini-malls and dotty office buildings practically lull drivers into a coma, BP's Helios house is a wake-up call. Its two-story vaulted canopy made of triangular stainless steel panels grabs your eye, almost as much as its sparkly concrete floor. The canopy gathers rainfall and props up 90 solar panels. The floor is made of recycled glass. Everything about this place, from its green roof to its low-flow toilets, has been carefully planned to reduce its impact on the environment. Everything, that is, except its product. This is a gas station, and as gasoline flows into Mike Zykoff's Honda Civic, a member of BP's green team, a young goateed gentleman named Gabre, approaches.
How are you today, sir?
I'm well, thank you.
Have you visited us before?
No.
Gabre explains the green features of the station and sums his talk up by giving Zykoff a series of cards with energy-saving hints. Cards encrusted with wildflower seeds so that after Zykoff has read them, he can bury them and start a small garden of his own.
So everything's done with that kind of thinking in mind, saving energy, saving raw materials or using.
Zykoff likes the paper. He says it's given him an idea to order some for his business, but he can't get past the fact that as he's reading about how to save the environment, he's pumping his car full of gas.
It's nice that they've, you know, solar power and use recycled materials. So, yeah, it makes a difference. You know, it says, hey, they're doing something, but it's still BP gas. It's not like healthy gas, you know.
To its credit, after branding itself Beyond Petroleum a few years ago, BP has invested $8 billion in developing alternative energies. It's also made a $500 million deal with UC Berkeley to fund an institute for biofuels research. BP's Irina Filipova says prior to Helios House, this corner was a rundown, thrifty brand gas station.
This is what we call an upcycle corner, a way for us to stimulate an exchange of views and a conversation about the environment.
But some think that conversation should include offering alternative fuels to gasoline.
It's kind of like putting lipstick on a pig.
Bernadette Del Chiaro works for the nonprofit advocacy group Environment California.
You can put solar panels on a gas station, but at the end of the day, it's still a gas station. You know, from an environmental point of view, this is one of the most dangerous products that we, you know, one can sell for the planet. And, you know, we really kind of expect BP to do a whole lot more.
Like offering cleaner burning fuels like ethanol or biodiesel. BP's Irina Filipova says California regulations don't permit BP to sell these types of fuels widely. She says there were also other constraints.
Because of certain, you know, safety features of the station, there are a lot of permitting aspects to this as well. So we've started with what we had before. We've made what we had before a little better.
In fact, the almost self-effacing phrase, a little better, is used to market Helios House. The phrase floats above blades of grass on a billboard atop the station, and Filipova uses the phrase liberally in her talking points. The idea seems to be rubbing off on BP's customers.
You got to give them credit for something, you know.
To do away with gas is not realistic. So if you're going to do something that helps the environment while you're selling the gas, then that's great.
Come to Helios House. It's where it's at. Oh, no, let me give y'all a better commercial. Come to Helios House. Saves the environment just a little bit better.
Environmentalists may diagnose these responses as nothing more than being greenwashed, being tricked into thinking environmental problems are being solved when they really aren't. BP's Irina Filipova says all BP is doing is trying to educate its consumers about how they can live a greener life and make the world a little better. For the California Report, I'm Rob Schmitz in Los Angeles.
Well, it's a big weekend for the boys of summer. Major League Baseball kicks off its new season Sunday. Now, I know steroid scandals and all that cash the players earn make it easy to be cynical about pro sports these days, but we didn't find any cynics at Trinta Field in San Mateo this week, where two Little League games were underway.
My name is Gary Tagliafico, and I coach San Mateo American Little League, Major League level. The team's called the Giants. They're 10, 11, 12 years old, and the one thing that I hope they get out of it is that they come out here and have fun, win, lose, or draw, whatever, that this time their life goes by too quickly, it gets too serious too fast, that they should come out here and do what the game of baseball was meant for, is have fun.
11-year-old Joey Ruggiero is just watching the games. He plays with the Pirates.
You can get good hits, and you get game balls, and you can pitch and catch, and yeah. I like to play in the outfield because in majors you get baseballs hit to you more often.
And Joey's favorite player, San Francisco Giants shortstop Omar Vizquel. Joey's mother, Laura Ruggiero, says kids need to understand their baseball heroes are people too.
But I think it's important that they understand that as much as they're role models, they're also just human beings, and they need to recognize that as well. And just like anyone, you know, if your kid strikes out, well, Barry Bonds strikes out, you know. So sometimes, you know, we have to keep everything in perspective, and I hope that we're teaching our kids that.
Coach Matt Arnold is a San Mateo native, grew up a Giants fan, but when it came time to pick a name for his Little League team, he chose the club on the other side of the bay.
I think the A's make great role models. They're young and they're team-oriented, and they don't have a whole lot of skill, but they're good because of the way they play as a team. And you look at some other teams that don't necessarily have that quality about them.
Arnold's son has been playing since he was 4.
So when you start early, you can't get it out of your system. So it's it just goes from one generation to the next, and it's kind of interesting that I'm at the same fields that my that I played that my son's at now.
Michael Green's here to watch his stepson, Melvin Brown.
Number 10, and he's on the Raptors, and he's up to bat right now. Hopefully we'll get a good hit. Oh, almost. It was foul ball, but good contact. So hopefully the next one, we got some guys on base. Hopefully he can get a RBI.
I'm Marina Fitzgerald, and I'm watching my son, Casey Fitzgerald.
Did he just score a run?
He did. He just slid into home. Number 6, yeah.
Excellent. So he likes playing baseball. He's a big baseball fan.
He's been a baseball fan since he was about 2 1/2, and he'd play in the living room watching the Giants on TV.
Yeah. How about you?
I have become a bigger baseball fan since he's been playing.
Kind of have to, huh?
Yeah, kind of have to. Yep.
Christine Stiles of San Mateo was cheering on her son, Tim.
He's, I think, about the youngest on the team, and so he's just so excited to be on it. I don't think he'd care if they were winning or losing. I work for Hewlett-Packard, so in business, and I think being on a team like this is, you know, how you rely on other players, learning to work with some people better than you, superior to you, and maybe right now he's the little guy on the totem pole. There's probably no one below him, but eventually lower than you, and relying on each other and backing each other up. I guess teamwork's number one.
Let's go, you guys. Watch the play. Oh, catcher! Let's go!
Three.
Good job, Jimmy.
Good job. Way to get that in, guys. Hustle.
And joining us now for a look at how California's 5 Major League Baseball teams may fare this year is Los Angeles Times sports writer Bill Shaken. And Bill, looking ahead to the season, what do you see? What are some of the more interesting stories out there?
I think the biggest one will be in San Francisco as Barry Bonds gets ready to break baseball's all-time home run record. It's a treasured record, but on the other hand, Bonds has been tainted by a steroid scandal and the way not only fans but Major League Baseball officials react to that record-breaking moment will be quite compelling to see.
And he needs 22 to break Hank Aaron's record, right?
Correct. He had 26 last year, so we're expecting him to get it in the second half of the season, provided that he stays healthy.
And he is healthy, at least at this point. What's an appropriate way to celebrate, do you think, if he breaks the record? And I guess everyone's hoping he does it at home, at least.
I think Major League Baseball is hoping more than anything he does it at home, because at least there he'll be guaranteed to be cheered. On the road, he is greeted with boos and jeers and sometimes things thrown at him, and that would be just a horrible public relations nightmare to see one of baseball's most cherished marks be greeted by boos, cheers, and God knows what else.
It is bittersweet, though, no matter how you look at it.
It can be, because Bonds is basically the symbol of an era where people don't know if the records are pure or the men setting them are pure.
Let's stick with the Giants for a moment, because they're going to be the source of a lot of drama, if not a lot of victories this year. They've got two Barrys on the roster this year. Barry Zito, who they picked up, a terrific pitcher they got from the Oakland A's. How much of a difference can he make?
I think Zito will be fine, but unfortunately, in baseball, we have a 25-man roster. Even two Barrys, no matter how good they are, any other two players are not going to make a whole lot of difference. I think Barry 1 will be good. I think Barry 2 will be good. And I think the rest of the team is just simply too old and too underproductive to compete for the championship this year.
Looking at the rest of the National League West, you've got the San Diego Padres and the L.A. Dodgers along with the Giants. The Padres came in first last year. The Dodgers finished fast but came in second. What do you see this year?
Well, they both made the playoffs last year, and I think they both have a chance, unlike the Giants, to get back this year. The Arizona Diamondbacks have a wonderful crop of up-and-coming young players, and if they blossom, they might be able to beat out both the Dodgers and the Padres.
Let's go to the American League West. You've got the Oakland A's and the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, and I'm still not used to saying that, I got to tell you. The A's won that division last year. Anaheim did reasonably well, but what do you see this time around?
The Angels have a superior pitching staff, especially starting pitching. Zito's absence will certainly hurt the A's. They may have pitchers that are more talented, but Zito was quite durable as well as talented, and you could count on him to take the ball every time it was his turn to do it. Rich Harden, who's going to be the ace this year, has struggled with injuries the past couple years. If he can stay healthy, certainly the A's can stay with the Angels, but if he can't, then there's no one really to take his place.
Bill, you wrote an article this week about how the internet is changing the way fans buy tickets and the way teams structure the sale of tickets. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Basically, when I was growing up, and I'm 43 years old, I would go to the Dodger games and walk up, and you'd say, I want a box seat, and they'd sell you a box seat, and there really wasn't much more to it. Now, in order to maximize revenue, what teams have realized is, well, a box seat behind home plate might not be as worth the similar value, let's say, as a box seat up by the foul pole. One is clearly better. And using that premise, they've sliced and diced the whole stadium, and this is not just the Giants or A's or Dodgers or Angels, it's everybody. And what used to be a box seat, well, maybe now there's eight categories of box seats. And maybe what used to be three levels of seats and every level was the same price, well, now there's, in the Dodgers case, there's 104 different prices this year, depending on where you sit, when you buy your ticket, and if you buy it for a game or several games or the whole season.
And so in the end, other than being more complicated, is that a better deal or a worse deal for fans?
Well, the teams will tell you it's a better deal because you have a lot more options, and in that case, that's true. But it hasn't stopped the ticket prices from going up, and what it usually means is not that some prices go down and others go up. It means that some go up and others go up even more.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Bill, the All-Star Game this year is going to be in San Francisco, July 10th. First time the game has been held there in the new park, and I've lost track of what the name of the park is. I think it's AT&T Park now, but kind of exciting to have the game in a great stadium like that in the city of San Francisco.
I think it is. It's a reward for the Giants for building a new stadium. The commissioner of baseball generally does reward the teams that do that. It's clearly a beautiful park in a beautiful setting, and if Bonds plays his cards right, it could be his coronation for breaking the home run record.
All right, Bill Shakin, sports writer for the Los Angeles Times. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That's our show for this week. The California Report is a production of KQED Public Radio. Our director is Susie Rocho. Seal Muller is the technical producer, with additional engineering by Howard Gelman, Danny Bringer, and Jim Bennett. Our interns are Elsa Chang and Colin Musil. The producers are Victoria Maleon and Erica Kelly. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. Susan Kennedy is the managing editor. The executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Healthcare Foundation, committed to improving California's healthcare delivery and financing systems, on the web at chcf.org. And the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995.